We're doing the In Yaakov. We're up to where it says on the top right corner, page 14, the beginning of the second chapter of Shabbos. Daf Zayin Amud Beis on the standard In Yaakov's Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph in the Talmud. So, for all the newcomers, In Yaakov is a work that distills the stories and the lines of Talmud that are of agadic nature. And right now, the chapter we're up to has a lot of Agada, a lot of Ein Yaakov. The topic we're on is which fuels is one permitted to use on Shabbos when you leave lights on around the house, and which fuels may you not use. So in their day, the standard fuel was oil. There were different types of oil. Right, and the lamps that they'd have lit around the house, which oils could they use? Those were the fuels they used. You had some kind of oil and some kind of wick. So the Mishnah says, "Velo v'shemen kik." One may not use an oil that's called shemen kik, oil of kik. My shemen kik. So the Talmud asks, "Okay, what is this oil of kik?" Amar Shmuel. So the first answer we're getting is from Shmuel. You will recall that Shmuel is the first generation of Amoraim, the first generation of rabbis of the Talmud. He actually learned under Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Rabbi wanted to ordain him to give him smicha, and it wouldn't work. Every time there was a different disturbance, they couldn't get it done. Shmuel was a great astronomer and an excellent doctor. He was Rabbi's doctor. So Shmuel says, he was also a top judge in when it came to monetary matters. We say in the arguments between Rav and Shmuel, halacha kerav be'isurei, the halacha is going to be like Rav with regards to prohibition, and Shmuel very often takes the cake when it comes to monetary matters. Amar Shmuel, so now the Talmud asks, what is this oil of cake? Shmuel says, shiltinu lechol nachutei yama. I asked all those people who take journeys out into the sea, ve'amru li, and they said to me, of echad yesh pekachei hayam, there is a bird out in the different islands, out in the sea, ve'kik shmo, so in the cities, out in the sea, meaning in the Far East or something, there's this bird that's called kik. So they would produce this oil from this bird. So that's shemen kik. The Mishnah, obviously in Israel, they had enough of this oil, it was worth addressing in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, don't use shemen kik. What is that? Shmuel says, I did some research, and they tell me it's the oil that comes from this bird.
Is this on Shabbat, or is this
on Shabbat? The idea is on Shabbat. These are oils that don't burn well. And then you'll come to dealing with the flame on Shabbos. One would come to desecrating Shabbos. So the rabbi said, don't use different types of oil that don't burn well. One example in the Mishnah is shemen kik. Okay, first understanding is that it's the oil they get from this bird. Rav Yitzchak b'ed Rav Yehuda amar, Rav Yitzchak, the son of Rav Yehuda, says, Mishcha de Kaza. We're talking about oil that comes from cottonseed. Okay, so cottonseed oil. That's the oil that doesn't burn well. That's what Shemen Kik is. Reish Lakish amar, who's Reish Lakish? Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, who was... Oh, so almost. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish used to learn Torah. Then he left the Beis Medrash, became a top bandit, had his own group of robbers. Then he wanted to steal from Rabbi Yochanan. And Rabbi Yochanan convinced him to do tshuva. And ultimately he married Rabbi Yochanan's sister. And ultimately, at one point, Rabbi Yochanan got upset at him and caused his untimely death. By spiritually, he didn't forgive him. And Reish Lakish got sicker and sicker and finally died. So,
what did he do to annoy the rabbi?
What did he do to annoy the rabbi? Okay.
And they're both really holy men.
So, Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan were discussing halacha about pigyon, about different metal instruments. When are you finished manufacturing them, that they get the halachic status of a vessel that they could become spiritually defiled. We know there's this concept of tumah, spiritual defilement. In order for something to get tumah, it has to have gemar melacha. You have to have finished making the object. So Rav Yochanan said one stage, and Reish Lakish said, no, until you cauterize it, until you put it in make it burning red hot and then dip it in cold water. That's called to cauterize, too.
I don't know the term.
Okay, I thought that was the term, but maybe not.
Sterilize?
No.
Dip it in hot water?
You make it, you put it in, you make it red hot and then you put it in cold water.
Kosher?
Oh.
No, it's like how you cauterize flesh, but I don't know if that's the best way.
Right. I don't know. Okay. So at any rate, until you do that, you're not finished. It's not ready to be used. So Rav Yochanan, what?
To make it brittle? Like,
no.
It makes it harder.
It makes it not be brittle. So Rav Yochanan said, I could tell you're, what?
Is it temper?
Maybe.
Oh, yes.
Temper? That's yeah, the temper. Nice. Okay. It's important. We don't lose our language skills.
No.
Temper? Okay, so Rav Yochanan made a comment to Reish Lakish. He says, I see you have a history. You know, you're a former bandit, so you know. And Reish Lakish was offended. Reish Lakish said, gee, before I came here, they called me rabbi too. The word rabbi only meant, in those days, rabbi meant leader, master. Another word for master was rabbi, meaning when you'd apprentice by someone, you'd call the teacher rabbi. And any teacher, even if he taught you other things. Just like an apprentice called his teacher master. So rabbi really meant master back then, like master as opposed to apprentice. And Reish Lakish said, I had a bunch of bandits, they called me rabbi then. I came to yeshiva, now I get the title rabbi, but what's the difference, I see? And Reish Lakish was very hurt by Rav Yochanan's comment. When Rav Yochanan heard that, Rav Yochanan was very hurt because Rav Yochanan had invested all this time. He said, you don't see a difference between the time you were a bandit, now you're a rabbi in yeshiva. And with that, the conversation ended. And obviously in heaven they sided with Rav Yochanan because Reish Lakish became deathly ill. And with that, Reish Lakish died. So the Talmud says that Rav Yochanan did not forgive Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish passed away. Then they brought in another student, Rabbi Elazar ben Pidas. He was the next in line. And anything Rabbi Yochanan would say, so Rabbi Elazar would give him support, he would give him proofs. And Rabbi Yochanan said, that's not what I need. I need my Reish Lakish. When Reish Lakish was here, anything I'd say, he'd show me contradictions from other sources, and then between the two of us, we'd both grow. I don't need you to support me. And ultimately, Rav Yochanan became mentally ill. He went out of his mind, out of sorrow over Reish Lakish, and then he has to die.
So they both died.
Right? Tragic story.
Horrible.
Right? Okay. Back to our Gemara. That, whenever you have stories like this, you have to wonder, who did they side with in heaven?
I was about to say
initially,
that.
You say they sided with Rav Yochanan, but you see, ultimately, Rav Yochanan, you want to hear another story like that?
Yes, nah. Yeah?
Okay, quick story. We'll get there in a few years. The other story is in Tanis. It's a little bit in next volume or two volumes down. So in Tractate Tanis, it says that there was a rabbi named Choni HaMe'agel, a great rabbi. So they needed rain, and they came to him. And Choni did as his predecessors had done, as the great prophet Habakkuk had done, who had learned it from Moshe Rabbeinu, that he drew a circle in the sand and said, I'm not leaving this till you answer me, God. So Moshe Rabbeinu did it when Miriam fell ill. He drew a circle in the sand and started praying for Miriam and said, God, I'm not leaving the circle till you accept my prayer. And then Habakkuk did that when he saw the terrible suffering of the Jewish people at the hands of the Romans. He also drew, at the hands of the Babylonians or the Assyrians. He also drew a circle in the sand and said, I'm not leaving till you answer me, God. How are you going to let this happen? These wicked people will take down people who are more righteous than they. So Choni HaMe'agel did the same thing. He drew a circle in the sand and said, I'm not leaving till you answer me. So then Choni started praying and it started drizzling. And he said, that's not the type of rain I've been asking for. He says, God, you know, what can I do? Your children have turned to me. They placed their focus on me to turn to you. So I'm asking you. And then it started pouring down torrents that were destructive. And Choni said, that's not the type of rain I was asking for. And then it started raining the exact, gentle, soft, effective rain that would support them. And when Choni got that, okay, he left the circle. He thanked God and moved on. The rain kept coming, and it wouldn't stop. And then they came to Choni, and they said, people have to evacuate their homes. And Choni said, once you ask for blessing, you could ask for it to start, you can't ask for blessing to stop. Until it reaches the Temple Mount, I can't do anything. So people started evacuating to the mountains, and the rain kept coming. Fine. The chief rabbi of the time sent a letter to Choni and said, if it weren't for the fact that you're Choni, I'd put you in halachic ostracism. I'd put you in nidui. Because to talk that way towards heaven, it's not respectful. But you know what? If God listens to you, I can't put you in ostracism. Obviously, you know, your prayer worked. So what can I do? You're like a kid who's disrespectful to his father. But his father loves him so much that he lets him get away with it. So praised are you and praised is the one that bore you. Okay. You go down a few lines in Talmud, and the Talmud says that throughout Choni's days, he always wondered, what does it mean in the Shir HaMalos, we say that when we return from the exile, Hayinu Kecholmim, we'll look back at the 70 years we were in exile, and we'll look at it all as though it were a dream. So Choni says, what does that mean? How could you look at 70 years and think of them as a dream? Can a person really dream for 70 years? So he was walking one day, he sat down by a tree, and he saw an old man planting a carob tree. He asked the person, why are you planting that? How long will it take till it bears fruit? So the old man said, this type takes 70 years to bear fruit. So Choni said, at your age, do you really expect to pick its fruit? So the old man said, no, but when I came to the world, there were carob trees like this that were planted by my predecessors on my behalf, so I'm planting for future generations as well. Fine. Choni sits down and falls asleep, and a tree grows over him, and he sleeps for 70 years. He wakes up, he looks, and he sees a carob tree, and he sees a man picking, and the man looks like that old man. So he says, are you the man who planted the tree? So the guy says, no, that was my grandfather. That was 70 years ago. Now I'm finally picking the fruit of the tree. So he said, oh, I must have slept for 70 years. So he went to, back to his home, and he said, is Choni's family here? So he said, no, everyone's dead. Choni, no, but his grandchildren are here. So Choni went to the Beis Medrash, and they're talking and learning, and every question they have, he answers. So they said, boy, this is what we heard it was like in this academy when Choni was around 70 years ago. Rumor has it, when he was around, he could answer all the questions like that. So he says, yeah, I'm Choni. So no one believed him. So he saw that they were treating him like, okay, he's a sharp guy, but he's a little crazy. He thinks he's Choni. So he walked out of the academy and said, God, I want to die. O chavrusa, o mitusa. Either a person has companionship, either people can understand who I am. If they can't appreciate who I am and I can't have a normal conversation with them, I have no connection with people, then I need to die. And his prayer was answered. So now you look at that story and you ask yourself, okay, who won? Choni asked for rain, he got his rain, but he got it to the extreme. They had to live off of mushrooms afterwards, because nothing could grow when you had marshland and swamps out of his prayer. And then the rabbi says, I would put you in halachic ostracism, but I can't. And then two lines down, you see that God did, right? God caused it that he basically ended up on his own in life. So, again, like the story of Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, you have to wonder, what's the Talmud really telling us? Who's the winner? Who's the loser? Or, like Benny pointed out, is everyone a loser, right?
There are other questions in that story.
That's true, but that we'll have to wait till we get to Ntanis. Give us a few years. So we're up to the middle paragraph. The second paragraph in... No, could you pass me your page? They didn't find him. A tree covered him.
The first one's probably
also
the second.
Tani, yeah. Well, it would seem that he slept through the destruction of the temple. It would seem like he fell asleep and the temple was up.
I heard that was pretty loud. Sleep through that.
So obviously it was unusual, right? So a tree grew and covered him, and he. Oh, that's a good question. Tani Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama taught. Ptilot v'shmanim shamru chachamim en madlikin ben b'shabbat en madlikin ben b'mikdash. The wicks and oils, the different types of of oils that the Mishnah says that our sages say you can't use them to light on Shabbos. You can't either use them to light in the temple. Mishum Shneimar, the verse says, La'alot ner tamid. Then in the temple you have to have a constant flame. So how does that prove you can't use these wicks or oils? Hutani lavuhu amarla. He quoted it, and then he explained it. The wick and the oil have to be self-sustained. It cannot be that you need supportive material. These are wicks and oils that the rabbi said, if you light them on Shabbos, they might go out. They don't light well. So by the same token, the verse teaches us the constant flame in the temple has to be a flame that's a standalone, without support. So that's why you can't use these wicks or oils in the temple either. What we're about to learn, the next line in Talmud, is the first time probably that you had recycling in the world. Tanan, the Mishnah teaches, from the pants and the belts of the Kohanim that wore down, so they used to take them apart, they used to rework them and turn them into wicks. Umehen madlikin, and they'd use them to create wicks. And those wicks were actually used in the great celebration of Simchas Beis HaShoeva in the temple. When they'd have on Sukkot celebration, as they drew the water, as they libated the water, and people would dance. So what torches, how'd they have torches? They used their clothing. Now the problem is that within the clothing, you have different materials that the Mishnah says cannot be used as wicks on Shabbos. So then how come they use them in the temple? I thought we just said you can't use in the temple whatever wouldn't be used on Shabbos. Those are materials that don't light well on their own. Answers the Gemara, yeah, we were talking about lighting the menorah. But here, Simchat Beit HaShoeva Shani, this is a celebration. This is just setting up torches for the celebration in the temple. Those torches you could use other materials for. That's not a holy usage that requires a flame that goes unsupported. The verse was talking about the flames of the flames that are obligatory in the temple. Okay, next we have an interesting line. Shebao bagmar lefaresh manim uptilot. When the Talmud comes to explain the oils and wicks of the Mishnah, is kirum linyan Chanukah. So from there, the Talmud goes off on a tangent and starts discussing using those wicks and oils for Chanukah. V'amar Rav madlikim b'em. Rav says you could use them for Chanukah. Amar Rav Yirmiyah maitaima. Rav Yirmiyah says, why can you use these oils and wicks for Chanukah? Maitaima de Rav kasavar kaftan zakukla. Because Rav holds that if the flame goes out on Chanukah, you don't have to relight it. So that's how we go halachically. If you lit your chanukiah, your menorah, in a normal place where it should have stayed lit, and then it happens to go out, you don't have to relight it. And now we're about to enter the whole Gemara on Hanukkah. It's all here. That's it. This is the major source for Hanukkah. The Gemara is going off on a tangent. The students quoted this quote in the name of Rav Yirmiyah. They quoted it to Abaye. And in a minute, we'll come back, we'll explain who's Abaye. Abaye didn't believe it. He said, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong. Kiata Ravin, when Rabbi Avin came from Israel to Babylon, so then Ravin came from Israel and brought along a quote that Rav Yochanan said the same thing. And then Abaye heard it in the name of Rav Yochanan, v'kibla. And then he said, okay, I believe it. If Rav Yochanan said it, it's right. Amar, Abaye made a comment, Izakai, if I would have merited, Gamirta l'shmaita meikara. I'm about to hurt all of you, but what can I do? Abaye said, if I would have merited, I would have believed it the first time. Va'agamra, so the Gemara says, why was Abaye bothered? He ended up learning it anyways. Answers the Gemara, Nafkamina legilsa diankuta. The difference is whether you learn something as a child or as an adult. What you learn as a child stays with you. You have to start learning something as an adult. It's much harder to retain. So at first glance, this Gemara is a very difficult Gemara for someone who's a chozer b'tshuva or a ger. Because you have almost nothing in Judaism that you learned as a child. Now, first of all, there's truth to it. Meaning there's definitely an element where You guys will remember the songs of your movies. You'll remember the cartoons. You'll remember the baseball cards if you were following baseball. There's a lot of information that you grasp as a kid, and it's easy. My very educated mother just served us 9 pickles, right? Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. There, I learned it in 3rd or 4th grade. It's with me. That's a way to remember. The first letter corresponds to the first letter of the planets. Right. My very educated mother just served us 9 pickles. So, served me 9. Okay. So, that's one aspect of it. So, when I entered yeshiva, one of the rabbis told me, "You're young. Learn now." I said, "What do you mean I'm young? I'm already 19, 20. He said to me, no, believe me, what you learn at 20 is better than what you learn at 30. And what you learn at 30 is better than what you learn at 40. This gears to the uncle, so it isn't only when you're a kid. This applies to the other ages too. So then life crept up on me and suddenly I was 30. So then I really felt bad. And then 2 years ago, I had the good fortune of accompanying Rabbi Rom on one of his walks to yeshiva or from yeshiva. Now, Rabbi Rom is a rabbi who lives down the block in Har Nof. He was one of the rabbis on the high court in South Africa. And I'll tell you a little story about Rabbi Rom. He was in South Africa, and the chief rabbi of Israel at the time, Rabbi Goren, came to visit South Africa. And when Rabbi Goren visited South Africa, he met Rabbi Rom, and he said to him, do you have rabbinic ordination for the court, to sit on the court? And he said, no, I don't have the ordination from the rabbinate. So Rabbi Rom said, when you come back to Israel, come by me. I want to give it to you from the rabbinate. You should be ordained by the rabbinate as well. So he knew his stuff very well. He comes back to Israel a few years later, and he gets an appointment, and he comes into Rabbi Goren's office. Now, Rabbi Goren didn't remember who he was, so when he came in, Rabbi Goren thought he was coming to be interviewed for a smicha, regular rabbinic smicha, not for the court. So Rabbi Goren starts talking to him, and then he suddenly gets the feeling that this guy knows more than that. He says to him, wait a second. You came here to get rabbinic ordination for the court, not just for the rabbinate. So Rav Ram didn't know what to say. He said, Lechora, at first glance, that's what it would seem, yeah. So Rabbi Goren said, okay, the word Lechora appears one time in all Talmud. All these volumes, it appears once. Tell me where it appears, and then I'll sign the paper that you should go in for the test. So Rav Ram answered him. He told him the page where it appears. So that's the mind.
Does it appear?
In Tractate Yevamos. Not that I would know, unfortunately. I don't remember things that well. Back to our story. So I was walking with Rabbi Rom, and I was talking to him about learning. And I said to him, you know, one of the things I feel bad about is that I didn't learn enough as a younger when I was younger. Because now, you know, our gears of the ankus, I quote them this Gemara. So he said to me, that's so interesting, because I feel like I'm learning more now than I ever did. And the mind can retain, it doesn't, you know, it works. I said, nah. He said, yeah. I said, come on. He said, no, if you sit down and focus, your mind can grasp no less than it did when you were younger. And sometimes even more. So he encouraged me, gave me strength to get back to the books, and it'll still work. So that's what I'm telling you guys. What this Gemara meant, okay, there's some benefit to getting things when you're younger, but at the end of the day, you could still make it work when you're older. Okay.
No, I can remember a lot of things.
Good.
That I learned. I can tell what I learned yesterday, you know.
Okay, so here we have another support. Okay, let's stop here and...